Eva gave her one last worried look, started to say something, and changed her mind. Lips thinned by those unspoken words, she walked out of the double-wide and led the way to the old Ford Fairlane. They drove onto the island in silence. As they passed the high school, Lexi noticed the reader board. Now it read, Mia Faraday Memorial, Grace Church, 4 o'clock p.m. today. Grad Saturday at 1 o'clock. The parking lot in front of the Catholic Church was full. Lexi let out her breath. Eva pulled into an empty spot and parked. Lexi got out of the car. As she moved forward, her broken arm started to ache, and nerves fluttered in the pit of her stomach.
You can do it, Eva said, taking hold of Lexi's good arm.
Inside, the church was full of teenagers and parents and teachers. Up by the altar was a poster of Mia in her costume from Once Upon a Mattress. In the beaded blue bodice, with stage makeup emphasizing her green eyes, she looked radiant and beautiful, a young woman with a bright future. Lexi stumbled. Eva kept her going. Lexi heard people whisper as she passed.
Lexi Bale, surprise. If she'd been a better friend. Poor thing. Some nerve.
Hey, Lexi, you want to sit here? Lexi.
She turned slowly, saw Zach's ex-girlfriend Amanda Martin sitting in the pew to her right. Amanda scooted sideways, made her mom and dad scrunch together to make room. Lexi sat down by Amanda. She looked into the girl's sad eyes, and suddenly they were both crying. They hadn't been friends in high school, but it didn't matter now. All that stuff just fell away.
It totally wasn't your fault, Amanda said. I don't care what people say.
Lexi was surprised by how much that meant to her. She was also hurt by the idea that people she knew were talking about her, judging her, although she shouldn't have been.
Thanks.
Before Amanda could say anything else, the service began. The priest said Mia's name, and every high school girl in the church burst into tears, and more than a few boys joined in. The priest's words painted a picture of a happy 18-year-old girl who was almost Mia, and yet not quite. He didn't say that she snored when she lay on her back, or that she moved her lips when she read, or that she liked to hold her best friend's hand while they walked through the mall. His words she could withstand. It was the slideshow of Mia's life that devastated her. Mia in a pink tutu, her arms circled above her head. Mia holding a Captain Hook action figure, grinning. Holding Zack's hand as they stood in the cold ocean water, grimacing. The last picture was of Mia alone, wearing a crazy tie-dyed t-shirt and cutoffs, smiling for the camera, giving the world a thumbs up. Lexi closed her eyes, sobbing now. Music began to play. It was not the right music. Mia wouldn't have liked the droning, solemn chords. And somehow, that hurt most of all. Whoever had picked the music hadn't thought of Mia. It should have been a Disney song, something that would have gotten Mia on her feet and made her sing along with her hairbrush as a microphone.
Sing with me, Lexter. We could be in a band.
And Zach, laughing, saying, No more, Mia. Dogs are starting to howl. Lexi wanted to clamp her hands over her ears, but the words came from inside of her, memories blooming up and spilling over.
Time to go, Lexi,
Amanda said gently. Lexi opened her eyes.
Thanks for letting me sit with you.
You coming to graduation?
Lexi shrugged. Had it only been 6 days ago she and Mia and Zach had been together in the gym, practicing for graduation?
I don't know.
People moved into the aisle, streamed toward the double doors. Lexi felt their gazes on her. Faces frowned in recognition as they passed her. Parents looked judgmental. Kids looked sad and sympathetic. Finally, she saw the family. They sat in the front pew, still and stiff, and dressed in black. People paused to offer condolences as they passed. Lexi moved toward them, unable to stop herself. She was going against the flow. Mourner stared at her, frowned, moved out of her way. In the front row, the Faradays rose in unison and turned. Neither Jude nor Zack acknowledged her. They just stared, dull-eyed, their faces streaked with tears. Lexi had practiced what she would say to them 100 times, but now, faced with the magnitude of the loss and her guilt, she couldn't even open her mouth. The whole family turned away from her and walked to the church's side door. Lexi felt Eva come up beside her. She sagged into her aunt, giving up the strength it had taken to come here.
"No one blames him," Eva said bitterly. "It's not right."
"He wasn't driving."
"He should have been," Eva said. "What good is it to make a promise and then ignore it? He should be blamed, too."
Lexi remembered how he'd looked at her in the hospital. The green eyes she loved so much had been darkened by more than grief. She'd seen guilt there, too, as deep as her own. "He blames himself."
"That's not enough," Eva said firmly. "Let's go."
She took Lexi by the arm and led her out of the church. Lexi could hear people whispering about her, blaming her. If she'd been less culpable, she might have agreed with Eva, maybe been pissed at Zack. But any other blame was less than hers. That was all there was. Zack had failed to live up to a promise. She'd made the deadly decision herself. Guilt and remorse filled her to the brim. There was no room for anger, too. Zack had screwed up. Lexi had done far, far worse.
"Someone should have told me it was a bad idea to go to the funeral," Lexi said as they drove out of the parking lot.
"If someone had," Eva said, "I'm sure you would have listened."
Lexi wiped her eyes.
"Of course."
Jude sat huddled in the limousine's dark interior. Outside, it began to rain. Drops landed on the roof like infant heartbeats. She was so deep in grief that when the car door opened, letting in a blast of gray and yellow light, it stung her tear-burned eyes, and she looked around, disoriented.
"We're here,"
the driver said, standing by the open door. He was a slash of more black in the rain, a slanted shadow beneath an umbrella. Behind him, Molly and Tim stood huddled with their grown children.
"Come along, Zachary,"
her mother said, herding him out of the limousine. Miles slid past Jude and got out of the car. Then he held out his hand for her.
"Jude."
"Go on," she said, glad that he couldn't see her eyes behind the dark sunglasses she wore.
"I'll catch up with you,"
Miles said to Caroline, who no doubt nodded, and walked briskly away, making sure Zack stood up straight and didn't cry. That was what Jude remembered about her father's funeral, not crying. No one had cried for him. Her mother simply hadn't allowed it. She'd treated grief like a malignancy of some kind. A few snips, a few stitches, and you were good as new.
"You can't not go,"
Miles said, squatting beside the car. Rain pelted his face, straightened his hair.
"Watch me."
"Jude," he sighed.
It was their family sound now. Before, it had been laughter. Now, it was the sigh.
"Don't you think I want to be strong enough for this?" she said. "I'm ashamed of myself, and I want to be there. I just can't. I'm not ready to watch them lower her into the ground. And I'm sure as hell not ready to stand next to you while you let go of pink balloons."
Her voice broke on that,
like she's up in some heaven waiting to catch them. Jude, he said tiredly, and she understood. He wanted her to believe that Mia was in a better place, but Jude couldn't do it. She knew what it was costing her, this inability of hers to be strong, but she couldn't do it. There was simply nothing of her left. Try as hard as she might, and honestly, it exhausted her to even try. She couldn't seem to be present, not even as a mother. Zack knew she wasn't herself anymore. He treated her as if she were made of spun sugar. He approached her warily, making sure never to say anything about Mia. But sometimes, when she said goodnight to him, she saw the need in his eyes, the naked pain, and it hurt her to her bones. She'd reach for him in those moments, but he wasn't fooled. He knew it wasn't her touch, that somehow she wasn't there. And when she walked away, she saw that he looked more broken after she'd soothed him than before.
"You're breaking Zack's heart," Miles said. "I know you know that. He needs you today."
Jude swallowed hard. "I know, and I can't do it. I can't stand there. Did you see how they all looked at us at the funeral? All I could think was that I hated them all, with their healthy kids. I look at people who aren't us, and I hate them. And I look at Zack, and all I see is the emptiness beside him. He's half a person, and we all know it. And sometimes, I can't help blaming him. If he hadn't gotten drunk..." She drew in a sharp breath. "Or if I hadn't let him go that night..."
"You can't keep this up."
"It's been less than a week," she snapped. "And if you tell me time will heal this, I swear to God, I'll kill you in your sleep." Miles stared at her a long time, and then pulled her into his arms.
"I love you, Jude,"
he whispered into her ear, and against her best intentions, she started to cry. She loved him, too, and she loved Zack. It was in there, inside her, somewhere. She just couldn't reach it.
"I'll tell her goodbye for you."
She heard the car door click shut, and she was alone again, thankfully. For a long while, she sat there in the darkness, listening to the rain on the roof, trying not to think about anything. But her daughter's presence was everywhere, in every breath, every sigh, every blink of the eye. Finally, furtively, she reached into her small black purse and pulled out Mia's cell phone. With a quick glance around, she flipped it open and listened to Mia's outgoing message.
"Hi, you've reached Mia. I'm way too busy to talk now, but if you'll leave me a message, I'll totally get back to you."
Jude listened to it over and over again, sometimes talking to her daughter, sometimes crying, sometimes just listening. She was so caught up in reaching Mia that she gasped when the door opened. She snapped the phone shut and shoved it in her purse as Zack climbed into the limousine. His eyes were red and swollen, and his hair was plastered to his head. Jude slid over to him and took his hand. She hated the way he looked at her, surprised by her touch, and she wanted to offer words of comfort, but she had none. She and Zack and Miles slumped together on the long ride home. Her mother sat opposite them, her hands clasped in her lap, her beautiful eyes glistening with tears that never fell. Jude was surprised by that sign of emotion, of loss. Only a week ago, the sight of her mother's improbable tears would have amazed Jude, made her want to reach out. Now, she didn't care. Her own pain crowded out everyone else's. It was a pathetic, humiliating truth, but a truth nonetheless. At the house, Jude got out of the car and walked inside alone. All she wanted to do now was sleep. She must have said it out loud because she heard her mother say,
"That's a good idea. Sleep will help."
Jude seemed to awaken at that, Will it, Mother? Really?
Her mother patted Jude's wrist. It was a light touch, barely there before it was gone.
God doesn't give us more than we can bear. You're stronger than this, Judith. Anger blindsided Jude. It was one of her new emotions. She had never been angry before, not really. But it was always with her now, as much a part of her as the shape of her face and the color of her skin. It took tremendous effort not to show it all of the time. She spun away from her mother before she said something she would regret and headed for her bedroom. In the entryway, she came to a halt.
Where's Mia's sweater?
What?
Zack said, coming into the house.
Mia's green sweater. It was hanging right here.
Jude's anger mutated into panic.
It's in the laundry, her mother said. I was going to wash it along with...
Jude ran to the laundry room and pawed through the pile of dirty clothes until she found Mia's sweater. Bringing it to her face, she pressed the soft wool to her nose, inhaling Mia's scent. Her tears dampened the fabric, but she didn't care. Ignoring her family's stares, she stumbled into her bedroom and slammed the door shut behind her, collapsing on the bed. Finally, after what felt like hours, she heard her bedroom door open. She pretended to be asleep.
Hey,
Molly said from the doorway. She stood there, looking sad and uncertain in a chic black dress with a cinch belt, wringing her hands together. Her white hair was a mess, pulled back from her face in a thin headband. A black grow-out line spread along her forehead.
Can I come in?
Could I stop you?
No.
Jude crawled to a sit, leaned back against her silk-upholstered headboard. Molly got up onto the big bed and took Jude into her arms, holding her as if she were a child. Jude didn't mean to cry again, but she couldn't help it. Molly's embrace just pushed her over the edge, and God knew she spent her days standing alongside it.
I used to think I was strong, Jude whispered. You are strong, Molly said, tucking a damp strand of hair behind Jude's ear.
No, she said, pulling back. I have no idea who I am anymore. It was true. All of this had shown her the truth of her soul. She was weak, fragile, not the woman she'd imagined herself to be at all. Or maybe that wasn't true. Maybe she knew now what she hadn't known before. She wasn't kind and caring and compassionate and even-tempered. She was angry and weak and even a little vindictive. Most of all, she was a bad mother. Everything lately pissed her off. Sunshine, healthy children, parents who complained about their kids. Lexi. Jude suddenly didn't want to be touched. She pulled out of Molly's arms and slumped back against the headboard. She wasn't wearing her seatbelt. She said it quietly, afraid. It had only been a few days and already Jude had learned that people didn't want to hear about Mia. How was she supposed to stop talking about her daughter? But just the mention of her name could send people running for the door.
Tell me, Molly said, holding her hand, settling in beside her.
Thanks, Jude said. No one wants to hear about her.
I'll listen to anything you want to say.
Jude turned to her. She always wore her seatbelt. She drew in a shaking breath and reached over into the nightstand for tissues. A mistake. She saw that instantly. Inside the drawer, she saw a small blue velvet ring box sitting beside a pair of Costco reading glasses. Knowing she shouldn't touch it, she took it out, flipped it open.
What's that?
Molly asked. Mia's graduation present. Molly was silent for a moment.
It's beautiful.
I was going to take her shopping with me for the stone. A girl's day. Maybe a mani-pedi when we were done. On that, Jude's resolve cracked, and she started to cry.
Oh, Jude, Molly said, hugging her again. Jude should have felt enveloped by her friend's love, but she couldn't feel anything at all. Not then, as she stared down at this beautiful, unfinished ring with gaping, empty prongs. Chapter 15. The high school parking lot was full of cars on this sunny Saturday afternoon. Lexi sat in the passenger seat of her aunt's Ford Fairlane, staring through the grimy windshield at the crowd gathered around the flagpole.
You belong here, Alexa, her aunt said. You've worked as hard for this day as anyone else.
I'm afraid, she said quietly.
I know, her aunt said. That's why I'm here.
Lexi took a deep breath and reached for the door handle. The old door creaked open, popping at the end of its arc. She and Eva walked through the chattering crowd of family and friends who had come to see the class of 2004 graduate. Lexi kept her head down, not making eye contact with the reporters at the flagpole. As she passed them, she heard one of them say, 272 seniors, Phil. It should have been 273. At the edge of the football field, Lexi paused.
You better hurry, Eva said. We're late.
Lexi nodded, but as she looked at the rows of folding chairs set up on the green football field, she felt sick to her stomach.
I'm proud of you, Alexa, her aunt said. You're a good girl, and don't you dare think otherwise.
Eva gave her a bright smile and then disappeared into the crowd of parents streaming up the bleachers. Lexi saw the Faradays up there. Jude and Miles were seated in the second row, with Molly and Tim and Grandmother Caroline. Even from here, Lexi could see how pale and thin Jude looked. The black sunglasses she wore only accentuated the pallor of her skin and the sharpness of her cheekbones. She had no lipstick on, and she was carrying Mia's pink purse. Lexi couldn't do it. She couldn't walk through this crowd and go into the gymnasium, where all her friends were dressed in caps and gowns, waiting to walk triumphantly to the seats on the field. She couldn't see Zack, not on this day, when Mia's absence would be so keenly felt. She pulled off her cap and unzipped her gown, stuffing them both in her big patchwork purse. She was about to leave when the class of 2004 filed onto the field, a stream of royal blue and marigold yellow robes against a cloudless sky. She moved into one of the empty aisles beneath the bleachers. On the field below, her classmates moved into their assigned seats. Zack was walking alone, in sunglasses, probably to protect his burned eyes in this bright sunlight. With his half-shaved head and burned jawline, he hardly looked like himself. Like Jude, there was a new hollowness to his face, and he wasn't smiling. When the last of the seniors had taken their seats, the audience burst into applause. Amid the noise, Principal Yates walked onto the stage and stood at the podium. He spoke eloquently about Pine Island and what it was like to grow up in a land surrounded by water, how it strengthened the sense of community. At the end of his speech, he said,
"This is a class that has been touched by a sudden, terrible tragedy, and these students who were on their way to adulthood have grown up in the past week. We hope, as they move forward and are faced with choices in their life, both big and small, they will remember what they learned about consequences in the year 2004.
He gave the class a sad, knowing smile.
And now, Amanda Martin is going to sing a song in memory of a very special girl who should have been with us today.
Lexi tried to steel herself, but when the music began, she felt a terrible ache in her chest. And then Amanda's voice, pure and sweet, rang out. I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Lexi closed her eyes. The song brought Mia bursting back to life, twirling on the dance floor, singing off key. She'd loved the Disney movie so much. I'm Ariel, she used to say all the time. You're Belle.
No Snow White or Cinderella. Not for us. We're the new school Disney girls. We go for what we want.
Lexi wasn't the only one sobbing when Amanda finished her song. At least half of the senior class was crying. The applause was thunderous, and when it faded once again, the commencement began. One by one, her friends' names were called, and blue-robed girls and boys bounded onto the stage to take their diplomas and wave to the crowd.
Alexa Bale.
The audience stilled. People looked around. On stage, the principal cleared his throat and went on.
Andrew Clark.
Lexi's heart pounded. She was sure someone would point to her, yell, "There she is, there's the girl who killed Mia."
Zachary Faraday.
Zach walked woodenly up the aisle and onto the stage. He took his diploma from the principal and faced the bleachers. Slowly, he upheld a framed photograph of Mia and then leaned closer to the microphone.
"She wanted to do a cartwheel today."
"A cartwheel, Lexter? That would get their attention."
Lexi sagged back against the sun-warmed concrete wall, closing her eyes. The ceremony went on, calling names and handing out diplomas, but she hardly noticed. All she could hear were memories, things Mia had said to her over the years.
"Lex?"
She drew in a sharp breath and opened her eyes to see Zach standing in front of her. Behind them, down on the field, there was sound and color and movement. But here, it was quiet and still. They were alone in an alcove beneath the bleachers.
How did you find me?"
"I knew you'd be here."
She'd hoped for this moment, dreamed of it, thought of ways to make him understand how sorry she was. But she could see that he knew, that he understood.
"I love you,"
she said softly. It was the only thing that hadn't changed.
"I love you too, but..."
"But what?"
He shook his head, shrugged. She understood the gesture perfectly. It meant that nothing mattered anymore, their love least of all. His look was the saddest thing she'd ever seen.
"You'll never forgive me, will you?"
she said.
"It's me I can't forgive,"
he said, and on that, his voice broke and he turned away from her.
"I gotta go."
"Wait."
She reached into her purse, burrowed past the polyester of her gown, and pulled out her worn, dog-eared copy of Jane Eyre. It was a stupid gift for a girl to give a boy, but it was all she had that mattered to her.
"I want you to have this,"
she said.
"It's your favorite book. I can't take..."
"Please. It has a happy ending."
He reached out. For a second, they were both touching the book.
"I gotta go."
"I know. Goodbye, Zach,"
she whispered, watching him walk away from her. She pulled away from the wall and walked out beneath the bleachers. She didn't bother to hunch her shoulders or avert her eyes. She didn't care if people stared at her. She climbed into Eva's old car and waited.
"Couldn't do it, huh?"
Eva said later, when she got behind the wheel. Lexi shrugged.
"Who cares? It's just a dumb ceremony."
"You cared."
"Before,"
Lexi said, realizing as she said it that her whole life would now be divided into two parts, before she'd killed her best friend, and after. Graduation was more than Jude could handle. The day had been full of ghosts, missing faces, the wrong girls. By the time the ceremony finally ended, she felt like crumbling into a heap. She'd tried to convince Zach to go to the grad night party with his friends.
"You'll always remember it,"
she'd said tiredly, although they both knew it was a lie. Intellectually, she knew she should make him go, pretend that his life was still going forward on the same old track, but she couldn't really feel that. So they'd driven home in silence. She sat slumped against the car window, cold to the bone, even though the seat's heater was set on high. In the seat behind her, Zack drummed his fingers on the seat rest, and when they got home, he bolted out of the car and up the stairs. No doubt he wanted to lose himself in video games.
Lexi was there,
Miles said later, when he and Jude were in their bedroom. Jude felt a rush of anger. Whole, healthy Lexi, with just a white arm cast to mark her place in the car that night.
That takes nerve. I hope Zack didn't see her.
He did, Miles said, looking at her.
Don't do that, Jude. You'll make it worse.
Worse? Are you kidding me? How could this possibly get worse?
Don't make Zack choose between you and Lexi. He loves you, you know that. He's always done everything he could to make you proud of him. Don't use that against him now. He and Lexi have things to work out.
Jude sighed heavily and went into the bathroom, closing the door behind her. She took a long, hot bath, but neither the water nor the solitude had helped. For the next 48 hours, all she did was lie in bed, sometimes sleeping, sometimes crying. She lay there with her eyes closed for hours, thinking, "Come to me, Mia," talking to her daughter. But nothing happened. Not a breeze across her face that felt like a breath. Not a flickering of the bedside lamp. Nothing. And she didn't really believe that Mia could hear her. By the time she finally crawled out of bed and changed out of her graduation clothes, she looked like a 90-year-old homeless woman who had found a designer dress on the street and worn it for weeks. She knew Miles didn't understand. Last night, he'd made that sound, that sigh of desperation or despair, when she couldn't change into a nightgown. He didn't understand how fragile she felt. If she lifted her arms, they might break off. Not bothering to shower or brush her teeth, she made her way out of the bedroom, drawn forward by the scent of Starbucks coffee. Miles was in the kitchen, sitting at the granite counter, sipping coffee. At her entrance, he sat up straighter, gave her a smile of relief that should have warmed her broken heart. The television was on. Before Jude could say anything, she heard the newscaster say, "Killed her best friend in a drunk driving incident only a week before graduation." Jude shouldn't have looked at the screen, but she did. The twisted, ruined Mustang with the windshield shattered made her almost violently ill. She hadn't seen that image before. And then Lexi's face was on screen, smiling brightly. "Local mad president Norma..." Miles hit the remote, and the screen went black. Jude felt that new anger rising in her again. It drowned out everything else. She heard Miles talking to her, but she couldn't hear anything except this roaring white noise in her head. She poured herself a cup of coffee and walked out of the kitchen. How would she survive this? How could she see Lexi again on the street someday and not just fall to her knees? Lexi, who could go on with her life? Jude stood in the great room, trembling, wondering what to do. Should she go back to bed? She closed her eyes, trying to clear her mind of the image she'd just seen of Zack's car. At first, she thought she heard her heart beating, and she thought, "That's odd." And then she realized someone was knocking on the front door. Wiping her eyes, she went to the door, expecting to see a friend with a casserole saying, "I'm so sorry." But it was a stranger who stood there. A tall, elegant-looking gray-haired man in a pinstriped blue suit.
"Hello, Mrs. Faraday. I don't know if you remember me. I'm Dennis Uslan. I'm the prosecuting attorney assigned to your case. My niece, Helen, graduated with Zachary."
Jude's breath released in a rush. She hadn't even realized she'd been holding it. "Yes, Dennis, of course I remember you. You helped with construction of the new ball field at Rotary Park."
"Yes, that's right. I'm sorry to simply stop by, but your phone seems to be off the hook."
"Reporters," she said, stepping back. They call constantly asking for a comment on our tragedy. Come in. She led him into the great room, where sunlight shone through the giant windows. The view over the Sound was spectacular on this crystalline day. Dennis had just taken a seat when Miles walked into the room, dressed in shorts for running. Miles, Jude said, this is Dennis Uslan. He's the prosecuting attorney for our case. Miles looked at Dennis.
I wasn't aware we had a case.
Dennis rose from his seat.
That's what I wanted to speak to you about. I'm getting a lot of pressure from MAD and the community to charge Alexa Bale with DUI vehicular homicide. Obviously, a trial can be a lengthy and heartbreaking undertaking, and I wanted to know where you stand on the idea.
What would happen to Lexi? Miles asked.
If convicted, she could face more than 15 years in prison, although, admittedly, that outcome is extreme. She could also be found not guilty, or plea bargain to something lesser. Any way you go, though, it's tough on the victim's family.
Jude flinched at the word victim.
I don't think it will help anyone if Lexi goes to prison, Miles said. We need to forgive her, not punish her. Maybe other kids could learn from her mistake. She could
forgive her. Jude couldn't believe what her husband had just said.
Mrs. Faraday, Dennis asked, what do you want?
Jude knew the right answer, knew what she would have said before all of this, what she would have believed, that Miles was right. Only forgiveness could ease Jude's pain. But she wasn't that woman anymore, and nothing could ease her pain. Justice, she said at last, seeing Miles's disappointment in her. What mother wouldn't want that? In the week since high school graduation, Lexi had become a lost soul. On Monday morning, she'd shown up bright and early for work at the ice cream shop, only to be told, kindly, but told just the same, that she'd been fired.
Try and understand, Mrs. Salter had said. There's a lot of anger against you in town right now. It would be bad for business to have you working here.
So for 7 days, Lexi had stayed home, reading one book after another. She was reading one of her favorites when someone knocked on her door.
Lexi?
Yeah?
Your lawyer is here.
Lexi put down her book and went out to the living room.
They filed charges against you, Scott said before Lexi even sat down. DUI, vehicular homicide, and assault. Your arraignment is Tuesday. We'll plead not guilty and get a court date.
Not guilty? Lexi said, trying to process it all. She didn't even know what she felt anymore.
The question is not whether you were driving or whether Mia died. It's about legal responsibility. You had an accident. You didn't commit a crime. So, our plan is...
Lexi didn't hear anything past responsibility. Suddenly, she was her own mother, trying to run away from what she'd done.
No,
she said sharply. Scott looked at her.
No what, Lexi?
I'm going to plead guilty, she said.
You most certainly will not, Eva said.
Scott frowned at her.
Am I supposed to get away with killing my best friend? I did it, and we can't afford...
You will not plead guilty, Eva said again. I have the money in my retirement fund. You're letting your emotions run wild, her lawyer said. I can see that you're a good person, and you want to do the right thing, but pleading guilty isn't it. DUI vehicular homicide is a Class A felony, punishable by up to life in prison. Believe me, prison is not where you want to be, Lexi. And with the sentiment out there, we have to fight for your freedom.
Could she stand up in court and say she wasn't guilty when everyone knew she was?
We all know what's right here. Don't you want me to do the right thing, Aunt Eva?
You are too young to know what's right here, Lexi. You did a terrible thing, I admit it.
But is prison the answer?
No. You were there. You visited your mother.
Eva moved closer. She cupped Lexi's face in her chapped, dry hands.
I know you're worried about me, but don't be. We can afford whatever we have to.
Even if you pled guilty and we got a plea bargain, Scott said, the judge wouldn't have to follow it. He can impose any sentence he wants within the guidelines. And with the media out there, he may want to make an example of you. You could spend your life behind bars, Lexi.
I am an example, Lexi said quietly. I am the worst thing that can happen, and kids should know that. How can I stand in that courtroom and say I'm not guilty?
Hasn't enough bad come from that night? Eva asked. This discussion is over. You're paying me for my advice, and this is it. You're pleading not guilty, Scott said firmly.
Lexi sighed. They were talking about the law and her future. That wasn't really the point at all, but they were trying so hard to save her. She didn't want to disappoint them, too, especially not Eva.
Okay.
Jude sat in the courtroom between her husband and her son. Zack sat perfectly upright, as she'd often begged him to do. Gone was the slouching, playful kid he'd been. Now, he pulled his pants up and wore a belt, and brushed his hair and cleaned his room without being asked. She knew why, too. He was trying so hard to make her happy. He lived in fear of saying or doing the wrong thing around her, of making her cry, especially here, in front of everyone they knew. The benches in the courtroom filled up quickly. As soon as word had gotten out about Lexi's arrest and arraignment, admittance to this courtroom had become the hottest ticket in town. People had lined up before dawn in the hopes that they would get a seat. Everyone had an opinion on the case. Some thought Lexi was a victim. Others deemed her a danger to society. Some blamed Jude and Miles for their lackluster supervision and bad parenting. These were the parents who swore their own children didn't drink. A few whack jobs even blamed the drinking age, saying that if it were 18, things like this wouldn't happen. Local reporters, and perhaps one or two national journalists, milled through the hallway outside. Jude didn't look around, didn't want to see the friends she'd made over her years here on Pine Island, the women she'd talked to during class parties, or in the carpool lane, or in the checkout lane at Safeway. Many of them called her regularly, and she took the calls, but they rarely lasted long. Jude simply couldn't think of what to say anymore. Neither did she care about representatives of MAD, who had conducted a press conference just this morning and were demanding prison time for Lexi. Lexi. Just the name was enough to send Jude spiraling into anger or despair. She did her best never to think about the girl who'd caused all of this, of the best friend who'd killed her daughter, the girl her son had loved, the girl she'd loved.
I'm sorry I'm late,
her mother said, taking a seat on Zack's other side. The judge cracked his gavel down and called for order. The gallery quieted.
Ms. Bale, the judge said, you are aware of the crimes with which you have been charged?
At the defendant's table, Lexi and her lawyer stood. She looked incredibly fragile and small, standing there. Her hair was unkempt and frizzy, out of control. Her cheap black pants needed ironing and were a little too short.
I am, Your Honor, Lexi said.
And on the charge of DUI vehicular homicide, how do you plead?
Lexi paused.
Guilty, Your Honor.
There was a moment of stunned surprise in the courtroom, and then pandemonium broke out. Both attorneys jumped to their feet, yelling over each other to be heard.
In my chambers, the judge said harshly. Now, you too, Ms. Bale.
Lexi followed her attorney out of the courtroom. In their wake, the gallery started whispering furiously among themselves. Beside her, Zack said,
I don't get it. What's she doing?
Jude sat very still, breathing as best she could, trying to feel nothing. This was some kind of ruse, a way to garner sympathy. She couldn't have answered Zack if she had known what to say. Finally, the lawyers filed back into the courtroom. The crowd quieted. The judge sat down and looked at Lexi.
And on the charge of vehicular assault?
Guilty, Your Honor, Lexi said. The judge nodded.
Miss Bale, it is my duty to remind you that you have the right to a trial in this case, to have your actions judged by a jury of your peers. You understand that by pleading guilty, you are relinquishing this right.
I do, Your Honor.
And you understand that a guilty plea will mean that you will be convicted of this crime without a trial, and that you may be subject to immediate sentencing.
I do, Your Honor, she said again, stronger this time.
Although it is unusual, given the terrible consequences of this case on the community, this court is prepared to put this matter to rest. Miss Bale, do you have a statement you'd like to make?
Lexi nodded briefly and rose. I do, Your Honor.
You may go to the podium, he directed.
Lexi walked over to the podium and looked out over the gallery. Her gaze went to Zack. I drank, and I drove, and I killed my best friend. My lawyer tells me that guilt or innocence is a question of law, but he's wrong. How can I atone? That's the real question. I can't. I can't. I can only pay for it and say how deeply, deeply sorry I am. I love Zack and the Faradays and Mia. I will always love them, and I pray that someday they will hear those words from me and not be hurt by them. Thank you. She returned to her place at the defendant's table and sat down. The judge looked down at some papers spread in front of him.
I have an amicus brief from Mothers Against Drunk Drivers asking for a sentence that will make an example of Ms. Bale and let other teens know what they could face in similar circumstances. And now, to the family.
He looked up and smiled gently.
I know it's unexpected, but would any of you like to make a statement to this court?
Miles looked at Jude. The prosecuting attorney had told them they'd be allowed to speak after the trial, so they'd thought about what they'd say, but it wasn't supposed to happen until weeks from now. Jude shrugged, uncertain. Miles rose to his feet and stood for a moment. Only the slightest tightening of his jaw betrayed the depth of his emotion. Looking at him now, no one in this room would imagine that he had begun to cry in his sleep. He smoothed the pale pink tie at his throat and went to the podium at the front of the room, looking out at their friends and neighbors.
As I'm sure everyone in this room knows, it has been an incredibly difficult 2 weeks for my family. There are no words to express the depth of our loss. Still, I'm surprised by Lexi's plea. I'm sure she was advised not to do so by her counsel. I know Lexi. She's been like a member of our family for the past few years. I know she would undo all of this if she could, and I am not so naive to believe that she is purely at fault and my own children are blameless. I should have forbidden my children to drink instead of remembering my own high school years. I should have been harder on them, perhaps taught them better lessons about alcohol. There is plenty of tragedy to go around here, and plenty of blame. It doesn't fall on Lexi alone.
He looked at Lexi.
I forgive you, Lexi, for what that's worth, and I admire your decision to plead guilty. I'm not sure I could have advised one of my children to do the same. Thank you, Your Honor, for this opportunity to speak,
Miles said at last, looking at the judge.
I ask, Only that you treat Lexi as a girl who made a terrible mistake and owned up to it, not as a cold-blooded killer. Prison is no answer. It is just another tragedy, and there's been enough of that.
He turned away from the podium and went back to his seat. Jude didn't make a conscious decision to speak. She stood like some kind of marionette on someone's strings, jerkily, awkward. She didn't even know what she would say until she stood at the podium, staring out at the people she'd known for years. She'd watched their children grow alongside hers, gone to their birthday parties. Some of them had younger kids who had yet to face the upcoming high school drinking parties.
"I wish to God I hadn't let my children go to the party that night," she said quietly, feeling something inside of her break. "I wish they hadn't gotten drunk. I wish Mia had put on her seatbelt. I wish they had called me to come and get them." She paused. "I will never hold my daughter again. I won't do her hair on her wedding day, or hold her first baby." She reached into her pocket and pulled out the ring she'd bought for Mia's graduation. The gold shone brightly beneath the fluorescent lighting, the empty prongs like fingers reaching.
"This is the ring I was going to give Mia for graduation.
I thought a pink pearl would be nice here, but I was going to let her decide."
Her voice weakened on that, and her strength evaporated. She looked at Lexi, sitting there crying. Those tears should have meant something to Jude. She knew that. But they didn't. Regret wouldn't bring Mia back.
"I can't forgive Lexi Bale. I wish I could. Maybe justice will help me. At the very least, maybe it will send a message to the next kid who thinks it's okay to drive home from a party."
She walked back to her seat and sat down, trying not to notice Miles's obvious disappointment in her.
"Mrs. Lang?" the judge said.
Lexi's aunt walked slowly to the podium. Instead of looking at the gallery, she looked at the bench.
"I am not an educated woman, Your Honor, but I know that justice and revenge are two different things. Lexi is a good girl who made a bad choice. I am proud of her for standing here and admitting that. I beg you to be merciful in sentencing. She has a lot of good she can do in this life, and I am afraid of what prison will do to her."
Mrs. Lang returned to her seat. The judge looked up.
"Anyone else?"
Jude felt Zack shift in his seat, and then, slowly, he stood. A gasp moved through the gallery. Jude knew what they saw when they looked at Zack. His burns, the half-shaved head, the discolored skin around his eyes, but mostly, those who knew him saw his sadness. The boy who used to smile was gone. In his place, this paler, injured version of her son.
"Zachary?" the judge said.
"It's not all her fault," he said without going to the podium. "I was the designated driver that night. I was the one who'd said I wouldn't drink. But I did anyway. I did. If she hadn't driven, I would have. I should go to prison instead of her."
He sat back down.
"Please stand, Ms. Bale," the judge said. "Teen drinking and driving is an epidemic in this country. Toxicology reports confirm that you were intoxicated when you decided to get behind the wheel of a car. At the end of the night, a girl was dead, and a community and a family are left to grieve."
He looked at Zack.
"Others might share moral responsibility for this tragedy, but the legal responsibility for this crime is yours alone. Obviously, no amount of prison time can make up for Mia's bright light or bring solace to the Faraday family. But I can make sure that other teens see this case and understand the risk they take when they drink and drive. I sentence you to 65 months in the Women's Correctional Facility in Purdy."
And the gavel fell.
Lexi heard her aunt cry out. Guards moved toward Lexi. One pulled her arms behind her and clamped handcuffs around her wrists. She felt her aunt's arms come around her. Lexi couldn't hug her back, and after all that had happened in the last weeks, that was when it really sunk in. She was going to prison. And for the first time, she was really, truly afraid. All she'd thought about was her soul and atonement. But what about her body? How would it be to spend more than 5 years behind bars? Oh, Lexi, Eva said, tearing up. Why? You took me in, Lexi said. Even now, with all that was happening, that sentence meant so much. Lexi found it hard to say more. I couldn't let you waste your savings on me. Waste? I'll never forget what you did for me. Eva started to cry in earnest. Be strong, she said. I'll visit as often as I can. I'll write to you.
That's enough, the guard said,
and Lexi felt herself being pulled away, led out of the courtroom and down a long hallway and up 2 sets of stairs. Finally, they put her in a room that was about 10 by 10, with cement walls, no window, a metal seatless toilet, and a metal bench. The place smelled of urine and sweat and dried vomit. She didn't want to sit down, so she stood there, waiting. She didn't wait long. Soon, the guards came back for her, talking to one another about something that had happened at lunch as they led her out of the back of the courthouse to a waiting police car.
We're taking you directly to Purdy, one of the guards said.
Purdy, the Washington Correction Center for Women. Lexi nodded and said nothing. The guard shackled her ankles and snapped her handcuffed wrists to the chain around her waist.
Let's go.
She hobbled along behind him, her head hung low. In the police car, she was buckled into the back seat. The chains around her waist bit into her back so that she had to sit forward, with her nose almost pressed against the grill that protected the officers in the front seat. As they drove to the corner, they came to a stoplight. In front of them, the Faradays were crossing the street. They looked like paper doll versions of themselves, thin and fragile and bent. Zack was in the back, alone, his shoulders slumped downward, his chin dropped. From this side, his shaved head and burned jaw turned him into someone she hardly recognized. Then the light changed, and they drove away. Purdy Prison was a monolithic slab of gray concrete set behind a wall of razor wire fencing. All around it were green trees and blue skies. The surrounding beauty only served to make the prison look darker and more menacing. As she moved toward this life she'd never imagined, Lexi wished suddenly, fervently, that she had pled not guilty, as her lawyer had suggested. Inside the prison, they put her in a big cage. Crouched inside like an animal, she could see some of the prison. Bars of steel and walls of plexiglass, and women in khaki gathered in groups. Lexi closed her eyes and tried to make it all go away. Finally, a guard came to get her, unlocked the cage, and herded her forward. She stood numbly beside him as he pressed her fingers onto an inked pad and rolled her prints onto paper. They positioned her in front of a camera, snapped a picture. Then someone yelled, "Next!" And she was moving again, shuffling forward into the loud, pulsing, clanging heart of the prison. The guard led her into a room.
"She's all yours."
2 female guards came forward.
"Strip,"
one said, resting a plump hand on the walkie-talkie on her belt.
"Here?"
"We can do it for you."
I'll do it.
Lexi's hands were shaking as she unhooked her belt and pulled it free from the loops. The guard took the belt from her, coiling it in her hands as if it were a weapon. Swallowing hard, Lexi unbuttoned her pants and stepped out of them. Then she kicked off her black flats and unbuttoned her white shirt. It took every scrap of bravery she possessed to reach behind her back to unhook her bra. When she was naked,